This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. It's finally summertime. That means many of us have vacations or trips planned with family and friends. Jesus' brother, James, wrote a letter to the churches throughout the Roman Empire so they'd be prepared to go on a journey through their Christian lives. Today, Pastor Sam Horn will begin a journey through James. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
I use the word journey intentionally. If you stop and think about how we talk about travel, we often talk about it in terms of a trip, but every once in a while we'll use the word journey to describe kind of what's going on in what we experience. When I think of a trip, I think of getting from point A to point B, and my whole idea is I want to get there and I want to get back. When I think about the word journey, I'm actually thinking about the trip itself. I'm thinking about what's going to happen along the way. What am I going to experience, or what do I hope to experience? What do I anticipate learning? What will happen along the way? What will I bring back from the journey? How will the journey affect me? How will it change me? How will it grow me? And sometimes we use that word not just to talk about getting in a car and going somewhere. Sometimes we use the word journey to talk about things that don't involve travel, like we were just talking about. So for example, we would describe maybe our 4 years at a university as a journey. Or maybe we would look at a particular experience that we have had in life. Maybe there was a particular trial we experienced, or there was a particular blessing that came our way, and we would look at that and we would describe all of that as a journey. And that's the word that I want to use as we talk about the book of James over the next several months. I want us to go on a journey. And I want us to focus not so much on the destination, but I want us to focus on what we will encounter along the way. And so what I want to do this morning is I want to do three things. I want to give you the background information that'll help us. This is the stuff we need to put in our backpack as we stand sort of at the head of the trail and we meet James, our tour guide. And there are things we need to know about him, and there are things we need to know about the journey before we start. So what are the things that we need to put in our backpack to make sure that we have everything we need mentally to gain everything we want to gain from our journey together? So I want to give us a little background. Then I want to ask and answer three questions. And then I want to make an appeal at the end. All right? So we're going to look at some background to sort of get us ready for the journey. We're going to ask and answer three important questions that I think will chart out the journey itself, sort of give us a roadmap so that we know kind of ahead of time where we're headed and what we're going to encounter on the way. And then I want to make an appeal at the end. So let's start with the important background information. And here's the way I want you to think about it. I want you to picture yourself standing at the head of a trail. And while you're waiting for the guide, while you're waiting for James to show up, you're sort of looking around at all of the placards and all of the things that are sort of positioned there that are designed to tell you things about that trail, things about the journey. If you've ever been, for example, to the Grand Canyon, there is a place that you can go before you actually get to the canyon. And as you're in that place and you look around, there are videos that are going. There are little places where you can read things. There are monitors that you can sort of touch and they'll bring up information. And all of that is there to give you information about what you're going to see and what you're going to experience while you're there. And that's really what I want to do this morning in this first part of our message. I want us to sort of look around, and I want us to make sure that we have the right background information so that we know what we are going to be looking at along the way. So let me give you a couple of things that I want to make sure you have in your backpack. Here they are. Number one, James is probably the earliest book written in our New Testament. It's the earliest New Testament book written, probably written in the mid-40s, somewhere between 44 and 47 AD. You say, well, what's the big deal about that? Well, let me give you just a reminder that Jesus Christ was 33 years old when he was crucified. We think that he was probably crucified. I'm sorry, he was 30 years old. We think he was probably crucified right around 33 AD. So if we take the word, you know, the number 30 to 33 or 35 AD, and we fast forward to 45 AD, we are talking about 10 years after the introduction of the major events and the major truths that make up our Christian faith. In other words, James is not just telling Christians what they need to know at the beginning of their individual journey. This book is actually helping the church at large know what they need to know at the start of its journey in this amazing faith that Jesus Christ has introduced. So James is a book about beginnings, individual beginnings, corporate beginnings, and big beginnings. James is a book about the beginning of everything that we believe. And so it's one of the earliest books in the New Testament. And then secondly, when James sat down to write, he didn't write by, like someone would write if they were living in theological isolation, far removed from the daily pressures that would come into the life of a person who had embraced the faith of Jesus Christ and had now to live that faith out in a world that either didn't know about that faith or was hostile to that faith. James is writing as a pastor. He himself, I mean, he knew himself what it was like to be a skeptic. He knew what it was like to hear these astonishing claims come out of the mouth of Jesus, and he knew what it was like to evaluate those claims and to reject them. He knew how hard it was to believe the amazing things that the gospel had to say about Jesus Christ, and he knew all too well how difficult those things were to embrace because he himself had been a skeptic as the brother of the Lord Jesus Christ. And now as the first pastor of the first church in Jerusalem, he is writing this letter to help others understand how to navigate their own faith under those kinds of pressures. And that's why the third thing we want to throw in our backpack is that this letter is deeply theological. It's the earliest letter. It was written by a pastor who understood how hard it was to embrace the truth about Jesus Christ and then to live that truth out in a culture where it was unknown, where it would be shocking, and where it would actually be offensive and resisted. And that's why he grounds what he has to say in the theology of the Old Testament. He wants you to know that this really isn't a new and novel faith. What he is going to write about is a faith that God has been talking about for the entire history of the human race. And everything you need to know about that faith up till the time that James wrote was written in the Old Testament. And that's why there's so many Old Testament references in the book of James. And James is deeply concerned that the theology of the Christian faith not just be given mental assent. In other words, that we don't just agree that we believe these things about Jesus of Nazareth, but that our belief actually be so deeply embedded in us that it begins to shape the way we think and the way we respond and the way we live out our lives wherever it is that we are living. And that's why he instructs believers in chapter 1, verse 21, to receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to save your souls. So this is the earliest letter. It's written by a pastor who understood the difficulty of embracing and living out the truths, the astonishing truth of the faith of Jesus Christ. It's deeply theological. And number four, it is appropriately practical. James is going to sit down with us, and he's going to tell us what true religion and genuine faith actually look like. It's like he's going to sit across the table as your pastor, and he's going to sit down with you, and he's going to say, "So I hear that you have made a confession. I hear that you've come to the place where you confess with your mouth the truth about the Lord Jesus Christ." Paul is going to say the very same thing to the Romans. If we confess with our mouth and believe in our heart, we will be what? Saved. So James is coming a little earlier, and he's sitting down with these people, and he's saying, "Look, I hear that you have confessed something. I hear that you have confessed the truth about Jesus Christ. I hear that you have embraced the faith of Christ. So I want to know if that confession is true and if that faith is genuine. I want to know if what's coming out of your mouth, I want to know if what you're telling people you have done, I want to know if the claims that you're making about being a follower of Jesus Christ, I want to know if those claims are true, and I want to know if that faith that you claim is actually real. I want to know if it's genuine." And that's why along the way, James is going to get deeply pastoral with us. He's going to sit down and he's going to ask in a very kind and gracious way some very pointed questions about our faith. Is it real? Is it genuine? So this letter is appropriately practical, but it's also graciously confrontational. So here's what's going on in James. When you get done listening to James and you let James ask you all the questions that he's going to ask you, James is actually going to talk about two ways. He's going to talk about two ways. And he's going to talk about two wisdoms. He's going to talk about a wisdom that comes down from above, a wisdom that is from God, and then he's going to talk about a wisdom that rises up from below or from beneath, a wisdom that is from the world. So there are two wisdoms. And when James talks about the idea of wisdom, he's not just talking about the way a person thinks or what a person knows. He's going back to the Old Testament, and he's referring to a body of wisdom that governs the life of a people group. So, for example, if you lived in ancient Egypt, there was a body of wisdom that navigated and shaped the way you thought as an Egyptian. How did you think about life? How did you think about death? How did you think about the way the world worked? Why was the Nile River so important? Why do we have these nine gods that we worship? Why do we spend all of our earthly resources building our house that we're going to stay in after we die, and we live in poverty in the meantime? Why do we live the way that we live? And the answer to all of those questions was in a body of wisdom that was common to the Egyptians. Every nation had a wisdom. And the people of God had a wisdom. And their wisdom was located in a book called the Torah. And in Deuteronomy chapter 4, Moses looked at the nation as he was handing them the finished copy for the second time of this wisdom, and he says to them as he hands them the book, the Torah, the scroll, he says to them, "This book is your wisdom in the sight of the nations." So when James talks about wisdom, he's not just talking about common sense and good advice. He's talking about a particular wisdom. And he pretty much puts all the wisdoms that exist on the planet in one of two categories. There is a wisdom that came down from God in the Torah, and there are all the other wisdoms in the world. And James is saying, in a very gracious but confrontational way, you have to choose between these two wisdoms. And these two wisdoms are going to lead to two ways. And so let me describe the ways, James says. There are two ways. There is a way of living that is shaped by the wisdom that comes down from above. And the people who walk on that way, we could call these people the friends of God. And there is all of this other wisdom. And by the way, Psalm 1 talks about this. Right? There is the counsel of the ungodly, there is the way of sinners, and there is the seed of the scornful. There is the way the world thinks, the way the world lives, and what the world values. And those wisdoms scoff and scorn and mock at the idea that there is a wisdom that is better that comes from above. And everybody that chooses that wisdom and walks in that way are the friends of God. And everybody that lives by these wisdoms and walks on this way are actually the friends of the world. And James is going to say a very direct and very confrontational thing. Friendship with the world and this wisdom is completely incompatible with friendship with God. In fact, if you have a friendship with the world, then you are what? At enmity with God. So when James gets very gracious and very confrontational, that's what he's doing. He's talking about people who are living out their faith, and they are constantly on a daily basis having to choose which wisdom they're going to live by and which way they're going to walk on. Are they going to be a friend of God, or are they going to be a friend of the world? And to help them understand what it looks like to be a friend of God, he gives them five models in the book. You're going to meet five friends of God. You're going to meet Abraham, and you're going to meet Rahab in chapter 2. They are friends of God. You're going to meet the prophets. They are friends of God in chapter 5. You're going to meet Job, who's a friend of God, in chapter 5. And then you're going to meet Elijah, who's a friend of God. And the whole point to the book is James is saying to you, look, I want you to know about these two ways, and I want you to know about these two wisdoms, because some of you are starting to choose to walk down the wrong way. And he has a word for this. And the word for that he has for this is a word that you meet in chapter 1, and it is the word double-minded. You are double-minded. Some of you are double-minded. You are double-souled. You have an affinity and you have a desire for this wisdom and this way, and you make a profession and a claim and a confession to belong to Jesus and to love Jesus. And that's what's coming out of your mouth. But then on the other hand, you also have an affinity and an attraction for the wisdom that comes from below. And you are cultivating a friendship with the world, and the evidence of that is all over your life. It comes out of your mouth. One time you're talking about this wisdom, and the words that are flowing out of your mouth are sweet, like water, fresh water that comes out of a fountain, and it's refreshing, and we listen, and we hear the wisdom that comes from above, and we hear the words that you say about Jesus, and the words you say about the Christian life, and the next time we meet you, what comes out of your mouth is bitter. It's salty. It's awful. And then we see the effects of it in your life. The words that come out of your mouth here are devouring one another. And James is saying to you, this is totally incompatible with who you really are as a Christian. And that's why at the very end of the book, James is going to come along and he's going to talk about a person who is wandering away from the truth. If you go to the very end of the book, you can see sort of the opening key or rather the key that opens the whole book. Here's what James says in verse 19, my brothers. If any among you, and he's talking now about Christians, he's talking to Christians, and he's talking about Christians. He says, brothers, that's who he's talking to. And then he's going to talk about someone who wanders, and the someone who wanders is among the Christians. This person is a Christian. So he's talking to Christians about a Christian. And here's what he says. My brothers, if any among you wanders from the truth and someone, what? Brings him back. If you wander from the truth and someone brings him back, let him know that whoever brings back a sinner from his wandering will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins. So, that's what's in our backpack now. We just loaded our backpack up with some amazing information. Earliest book in the New Testament, written by a pastor who understands the difficulty of believing initially these astonishing things about Jesus and then facing the reality of living out those amazing realities and truths in a context where nobody else buys it and nobody else understands it and nobody else can believe it. This is a book that is theologically rooted in the promises and in the models of the Old Testament, and it is extraordinarily practical as it talks about the fact that what we confess, our faith, needs to be genuine, it needs to be living, it needs to be growing. And it's graciously confrontational. So all of that's in our backpack now, all right? So that's the background. That's the first thing we want to do. Second thing we want to do is we want to answer three questions. So let me begin with question number one. And it's a very simple question. Who is James and what was he like? In other words, if we're going on this journey and James is our guide, we want to find out who James is. And what is it about James that makes him such a great guide? And there's a ton of things that we could say about James, but let me give you four this morning, all right? So who is James and what is he like? So here are four things that you need to know about James so that you will appreciate what he writes to us and you will have confidence in the way that he guides us on the journey. So the first thing we want to know about James, or we ought to know about James, is his personal piety. His personal piety. James had a nickname in the first century. Nicknames are funny, right? Nicknames, we give somebody a nickname for a lot of reasons. Sometimes we give a person a nickname because of something that is true about them. Like if a person is tall, we might call him Stretch. Right? Sometimes we give a person a nickname that is the opposite of what they are. Like we might call a large person Tiny. Call up Tiny and tell him to come over. Right? So we give nicknames to a lot of people, but a lot of times we give a person in the Bible a nickname to describe something that is true about them. And James had a nickname. You know what his nickname was? James the Just. James the Just. He was known throughout the first century as a just man.
Thank you, Pastor Sam. We'll continue this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker, Dr. Sam Horn, is the pastor for preaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. Join us for Sunday morning worship at 9 a.m. or 10:45 a.m. You can find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. If you have any questions about PBC, please email radio@pbcpowdersville.org. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.